Multifamily Matters, a weekly radio show that discusses the current topics and trends in the multifamily industry. Stay tuned and listen to the movers and shakers in multifamily share their opinions and thoughts about what's old, what's new, and where the multifamily industry is heading in the future. You are listening to Multifamily Matters, because multifamily matters.
Well, welcome and thank you for tuning in to Multifamily Matters, the only broadcast radio show in the nation that's solely dedicated to the multifamily industry. I'm your host, Paul Marks. We have a great show with wonderful guests who are extremely knowledgeable and right in the middle of today's topic. And today we're discussing evictions and public health. Joining me today by phone are two longtime multifamily industry veterans, George Guy, CEO and Executive Director of the Fort Wayne, Indiana Housing Authority, and Joy Horak-Brown, President and CEO of New Hope Housing in Houston, Texas. Welcome, everybody. Thanks for joining us today.
Welcome. Thank you for having us.
Glad to be here.
Mm-hmm. Okay. George, full disclosure for our listeners, I contacted you really when I saw something that you had posted about this topic, evictions and public health, how it affects people from different areas in the affordable housing market, and I'm sure in other segments of multifamily as well. But tell me a little bit about that. It was interesting. It was a very nice piece that I saw posted called Chalk Talk with George Guy. So tell us a little bit about what that means and what you were trying to accomplish with that.
Well, thanks, Paul. Again, thanks for having me on today. And I want to acknowledge my panelists here, Joy Brown, and the work that she's doing as well. What you saw there, Paul, was we do what we call Chalk Talk. Actually, we do it every Tuesday. And basically, we talk about exactly what you said, a question that people have. And people, a lot of people don't understand that housing is essential in terms of public health. And we've seen that now with the pandemic in terms of what folks that have that are impacted in a different way. Well, I don't say in a different way, but it has a more of an impact for folks that made the most vulnerable amongst us. So when you talk about the eviction moratorium and that impact that it may have on residents that are extremely low, all the way up to working middle class folks, there are some significant inequities as it pertains to access to health care, access to education, and those type of things. In terms of, it's different. And so what we're trying to do is make sure that, first of all, we're bridging some of those gaps as it pertains to those. We're trying to address some of those inequities. We're also trying to make sure people are aware of that so we can partner and collaborate in some in local communities as it pertains to solutions that will help those that are seeing those type of impacts. So that's the message. That's what we're doing. And we're doing that here in the state, but we're also doing that as an industry when it comes to public housing agencies. We're uniquely fit because of the amount, our customer base, it fits within all that. So it's essential that we address those concerns. Again, in a pandemic, we just seen that. And also, what you have in that is that, we were able to see some of the other social unrest that goes on. And all of that is just pertaining to some of the inequities that already exist for some of the most vulnerable among us. So we just want to make sure that we highlight, talk about, and come up with some solutions to address the challenges.
Well, I think we can all agree that housing is foundational. It isn't only about housing. It is about access to health care, access to education, and it's about reducing touch points with the criminal justice system. It's foundational. If you don't have a stable place to live, it's very difficult for you to attain stability in any area of your life, much less to move forward.
Yeah, and that's a great point. And George, what have you found in your area are the communities that are hit hardest?
Well, I don't think it's one particular area over the other. I think the bottom line is what we've seen is that the housing issue in terms of folks that are going to be impacted because of the loss of income or job in terms of you know, not being able to keep their place, or needing some financial, you know, needing to address some of those financial issues in terms of paying rent. But we've also saw where these are things that we've seen anyway, but they just become more more magnified for everyone else to see. And so I think that it's not one thing over the other. And then the access. And when we say access to healthcare, is that where some of these are housing developments are at, to no fault of ours, they're located in places where folks don't have access, adequate access. And because of that, and coupled with the fact that some of those are working in some of the production plants and those type of places where the infection can spread. So you have more widespread problems in some of these communities. So when you have more widespread, they're not able to work. And so their ability to get the resources necessary to Joy's point, to make sure they have that stability, is just impacted severely. So you have a lot of uncertainty that is coupled with the fact that the lack of access to resources.
So to comment on Houston for a moment, the Kinder Institute at Rice University does a study every year. They've done it for almost 40 years now, a gentleman by the name of Steven Kleinberg. And before the pandemic, the last study done of those surveyed, 40% of the people surveyed said that if they had to come up with $400 for an emergency, they wouldn't be able to. $400. And this is an emergency. So you can see that we already had a significant number of vulnerable Houstonians. And in that same survey, more than 30% of the individuals surveyed said they had had trouble paying their rent in the last year. And again, this was before the emergency. So I agree. We are working with an already vulnerable population across our society.
And George, I wanted to ask you, on your Chalk Talk piece that I saw, which caused me to want to reach out to you to be on our show, you had a comment or a point on there that said, doctors say that eviction is akin to toxic exposure. Can you elaborate on that a little bit?
I'm sorry, Paul, I didn't hear the last part of what you said.
I'd ask you if you could elaborate on the point that was in your piece that said doctors say that eviction is akin to toxic exposure. What does that mean?
Yeah, so what happened? So again, I think that, Joy and I are colleagues, and so we both understand this and sit from the same place. If I'm not in a stable housing situation, then what is going to happen? I am going to be more prone to be somewhere in some risky situation, which is going to yield a higher opportunity that I'm going to contract this virus and then spread throughout the community. And so for us, one of the things that we said right away was housing is essential. We need to make sure that folks are in place and are stable and not moving from couch to couch. So if someone's going to be evicted, they're going to be faced with that circumstances and be in situations because it's a matter of survival. And most folks that we, our folks that we deal with every day are trying to make ends meet. And so when you're in that kind of situation, you tend to just think about how do I survive to the next day? And so if I'm thinking of that, I'm not concerned so much with my health. I'm not saying that's not a concern to them, but I'm sure that is what the doctor was referring to, is that it is important that folks are able to keep their homes and stay stable, because it's to them, but also it impacts our community from a public health standpoint, because if you have these folks and their families out living in situations that are not safe, then that's going to impact the community, because that's how it spreads throughout the community. And so I think that's what the doctor and the medical professionals are interested in, what they're pointing to.
And Joy, are you seeing the same type of thing in the Houston market?
Well, certainly in the Houston market, we are very concerned about evictions, and that's a looming problem. One of the conundrums we're facing is, of course, as we know, the Center for Disease Control performed its duty and prescribed an eviction moratorium through the end of the year. But the real question is, sooner or later, the rent really does need to be paid. We can't look to landlords, whether it's public housing authorities or nonprofit real estate developers such as New Hope Housing. Housing Plus Services is our business, and we do serve vulnerable Houstonians. We can't look to landlords, whether they are public or private, to solve what is a broad societal problem. So simply saying there's an eviction moratorium and the rent isn't due doesn't solve the problem. It's a problem that must be solved at the federal level, and it isn't being. And there's going to be a tremendous time lag, obviously, to solve this come January. I don't believe that individuals who are not paying the rent now because they have lost their positions due to the pandemic will suddenly have the funds to pay their back rent and to go forward. What are you seeing in your part of the country?
I just wanted to say that those challenges are existing for the landlords as well here in the state of Indiana. I think, again, across the country, is that these are the folks that are this is where this public and private, it's a public and private issue, is that if these business owners who have the homes that keep folks secure are not able to run their business, and you're going to go bankrupt because they can't see the monies that they need to do the proper repairs or pay their mortgage and things of that nature. I mean, there's someone that's going to lose a business who will be faced with a situation of poverty as well and access. So, again, I think that's why how complex this problem is, and moratoriums, unfortunately, don't go far enough.
All right, well, we're going to leave it there for this segment. We're going to be back with our next segment of Multifamily Matters after this break. You are listening to Multifamily Matters because multifamily matters.
In a world where keeping up with an ever-evolving technology landscape continues to be a challenge, Allegion helps property managers cut through the noise to supply their residents with the amenity most critical to the digital generation, mobile access control. Ideal for the multifamily market, Allegion has designed mobile-enabled solutions that streamlines access while providing the security and benefits for developers, property managers, and residents alike. To learn more about Allegion's access control product offerings, please visit usallegion.com/MFM. COVID-19 has greatly impacted the multifamily industry, emphasizing the need to reduce costs and increase revenue right now. PM Workforce can help you by providing intensely trained, performance-ready, certified leasing professionals. On-demand labor gives you more control over staffing costs. Their proprietary technology allows you to solve staffing problems within 60 minutes, 24/7, 365. Go to PMWorkforce.com before making a long-term hiring decision. Try one of their leasing professionals today. PM Workforce, the leasing management company. Consistently excellent.
Well, we are back, and we're listening to Multifamily Matters, and we are discussing the topic of evictions and public health. I'm Paul Marks, and joining me today by phone are two longtime multifamily industry veterans, George Guy, CEO and Executive Director of the Fort Wayne, Indiana Housing Authority, and Joy Horick Brown, President and CEO of New Hope Housing in Houston, Texas. Before we jump back in the conversation, though, I want to remind our listeners, if you would like to provide show topics, guest ideas, suggestions, or listen to any archived episode of Multifamily Matters, please go to our website at multifamilyradio.com. George, I think in the first segment we talked about a lot of different things as it pertains to the public health and what's going on currently with the pandemic. I do want to ask you, though, from an affordable housing standpoint, what about the inequities of access that people have to education and different things? What are you seeing in your market?
Well, I think that what's specific to us is probably specific to other communities. But again, when we talk about this access, this didn't start in this conversation. Unfortunately, where our developments are at, as we understand what housing is now, which is, I think, is unfortunate, is that where you live determines the outcome, can determine the outcome of your life, in terms of where you end up at and what you'll do. And that has something to do with the fact that these, in the zip codes that these housing developments are located, their access to quality education and a balanced education, as with someone in a different zip code, it looks much different, and their expectations are different. And that's unfortunate already. Now that when you have a pandemic, which, again, these folks don't have access now to broadband, access to do home remote learning and those type of things, now I'm even further behind. And then, you know, we can just do the research shows that folks that are in these circumstances, their reading levels are low or lower than others that are in the community, again, in other zip codes. So now they're challenged with this as well. So they're further and further behind. So you look at a situation like COVID-19 where they had to be sent home. They're already faced with a summer slide. Now I wasn't in school for several months, and I have to try to get back to school. And then I'm faced with a decision of my safety or my education, or even to magnify even further, I'm faced with the fact that a parent, that a single parent or two parents for that matter, just trying to make ends meet. And now I'm forced now to send my child to school because I have no other choice. In doing that, and I'm behind, or I have to stay home and then try to address this situation of being behind because I don't have access in terms of tablets and things of that nature. So it furthers this problem in terms of these inequities that already exist in terms of folks' access to a quality, fair education. So we're seeing that this pandemic has really, again, highlighted that problem that was already there and made it much worse.
And part of the job and the responsibility of a nonprofit developer of housing plus services, which is what New Hope does, is to work to have real human impacts in circumstances such as this. So I'll give you a couple of examples. At one of our buildings, which is 187 1-2 and 3-bedroom apartments for homeless and at-risk families, we set up in a 6,000 square foot community services building, a learning center funded by Chevron and operated by the YMCA of Houston. And we have had youngsters in there every day doing their schoolwork and being guided by professionals. And now that HISD is opening back up, those will be after school programs to help with homework, to help bridge that gap. And very soon, in that same building, there will be a small healthcare clinic operated by Healthcare for the Homeless Houston, again, to bridge those inequities. It's important that we not only build in zip codes where access is easier, more readily available, but that we continue to build across the spectrum, certainly in Houston, Texas, and I would think across the country, so that we are revitalizing and bringing the proper housing plus services to all of our communities everywhere.
I certainly understand exactly what you're saying. And George, I wanted to ask you, because I know I haven't introduced this part of your resume, but you also serve currently as the state, the head of the state organization for affordable housing in Indiana. So you're looking at a lot of issues, not only from your local community, but also regionally and statewide, as well as nationally. Tell us a little bit about some of the things that you're seeing that I'm sure Joy has also seen in her market as well.
Yeah, I mean, just this, you know, one statistic I would say, you know, just according to the 2016 census status, 81.4 percent of United States have internet access. Now, Indiana is slightly less than that. It's around 79%, and I imagine that's probably fluctuated since then. But, you know, we're seeing this problem. Like where I'm at, wages are – it's a good place to live. It's really affordable, but wages are lower. And so, again, these are just some of the inequities that already exist. And so, again, in Indiana, it's the same as everywhere else. But and there's another statistic, you know, according to Ball State, that between 68,000 and 84,000 school-age children does not have access at home, internet access at home. Just imagine that many folks who don't have access, and they are going to be, even after this pandemic, post-pandemic, they're going to have to compete when they get out of school for those jobs. What is the job market going to look like? So those are the things, again, that we're focused on across the state in Indiana, is making sure that we shore up those inequities for everyone in every zip code. We want it to be the same in every zip code. And like Joy said, we call housing expanded. We try to have services available for those residents and participants that we partner with the school districts to ensure that everybody has a tablet and everybody has access to Wi-Fi to some degree. And so we make sure that the partnerships are in place, and we try to make sure that they happen statewide. Even on the moratorium, we make sure that public housing agencies were able to administer CARES Act funding to address rents for the landlords as well as the tenants that are outside of the public housing realm. So we've been trying to make sure that we create coalitions and collaborations to address all of the inequities that exist in the system.
Joy, I know you want to jump in, but we've got about a minute and a half left in this segment, so go ahead.
Well, I couldn't agree more. And what's very interesting and what has been highlighted is the lack of coordination nationally, the lack of addressing these inequities in a broad way. And definitely, I mean, I quite believe that the problems in Texas may be different than the problems in Indiana. And Texas is a huge state. If you leave Houston driving to California, when you hit El Paso, you're halfway there. And so Texas within its borders has a broad range of needs, but there are similarities, and we need to begin to have these conversations across borders and nationally about how we're going to address and indeed solve. So we can work at a local level. We do need that federal support. We need rent relief for landlords who cannot be expected to simply operate their buildings and pay their employees and their employees' health care and benefits without the rent being paid. And this needs to be broad, not only for rent and rental supports, but also for health care and for education and for our criminal justice system.
All right. Well, we will leave it there. We are going to take a break and be back with our next segment of Multifamily Matters right after these messages. You're listening to Multifamily Matters because multifamily matters.
Do you have multiple multifamily properties in your portfolio? Take control of your unpredictable IT spending with our managed IT services. Whether you have 5 or 500 properties, CTS has you covered with 24/7 nationwide remote and on-site support. Our pricing allows you to budget IT costs year after year with a predictable flat monthly rate. CTS provides the expertise, management, support, and tech infrastructure for all your properties. Call 888-255-9715 or visit ctsglobaltech.com for a free quote.
COVID-19 has greatly impacted the multifamily industry, emphasizing the need to reduce costs and increase revenue right now. PM Workforce can help you by providing intensely trained, performance-ready, certified leasing professionals. On-demand labor gives you more control over staffing costs. Their proprietary technology allows you to solve staffing problems within 60 minutes, 24/7, 365. Go to PMWorkforce.com before making a long-term hiring decision. Try one of their leasing professionals today. PM Workforce, the leasing management company. Consistently excellent.
Well, we are back and you are listening to Multifamily Matters. We're discussing the topic of evictions and public health. I'm Paul Marks, and joining today by phone are two longtime multifamily industry veterans, George Guy, CEO and Executive Director of the Fort Wayne, Indiana Housing Authority, and Joy Horrock Brown, President and CEO of New Hope Housing in Houston, Texas. I do want to take a moment and thank our exclusive sponsors that make Multifamily Matters possible. EconServe, providing multifamily water conservation solutions for properties across the U.S. PM Workforce, the leasing management company, consistently excellent. Allegion, a leading provider of mobile-enabled products and solutions for efficient access control within multifamily properties. And CTS, complete technology solutions, making managed IT an easy business decision for multifamily. George, well, I'll start with you on this. You know, we've talked a lot about what's going on within the affordable industry, what are the challenges due to the pandemic. But we touched a little bit on it before. There's always been a crisis nationally for affordable housing. Let's talk about that so our listeners have a better understanding of what's going on within the affordable housing segment.
I'm happy to address that. And one of the really startling statistics would be that in Houston, for every affordable rental unit needed for individuals who are at 30% of area median income and below, and let me define that for you, that's $15,000 a year and below, for every affordable rental unit needed, there are 19 units available. So for every 100 needed, there are 19. In other words, we have 20% of what we need to serve people who are living on Social Security. And here we are with a rapidly aging population in this country. And you can take that same statistic and then you can move it into other economic strata. And yes, it's more appealing. I mean, the number isn't quite as severe, but it's still a problem. We don't have across the board the affordable housing that is needed. And affordable housing is defined as you paying 30% or less of your income for housing and utilities. So that's affordability as defined by HUD, and I would agree with that, and I think you would agree with that across the country. What does the gap look like where you are in Indiana?
Yeah, and we're faced with the same situation. As I said before, Paul and Joy, the wages are not sufficient. Like, this is a very good place to live in terms of cost of living here in Fort Wayne and throughout the state of Indiana. However, in certain zip codes, you may find that you're employed, but your employment is not adequate, is sufficient enough to help you pay your bills and other things that you may be necessary for you to obtain. So that whole that gap between generational wealth, so to speak, or just access is just not there. So you have generations and generations of folks that are poverty stricken as a result of that. Yes, they're employed, but the wages are not sufficient enough to be able to do it. The other thing that we find here is that we have an area of concentration of poverty in certain zip codes of our city. And that's problematic because what that means is that in that same place, there's also been a significant number of lack of investment, if you will. So what we would constitute as housing opportunity areas, which I don't like that term, when essentially what that means is there's certain areas of our community that there's more opportunities. And so in these areas where they don't see opportunities and you got we have housing, but the housing is old and out of stock. And so when you're trying to do development deals and you're doing tax credit situations, what happens is that you're not replacing some of that old stock. So folks are living in places that are not adequate, and there's not enough affordable housing. But the other problem is that if you talk to leaders in that community where they have seen lack of investment, they're saying no more tax credit deals, no more affordable housing. We want to see more investment in terms of retail, in terms of jobs, to make their community more vibrant. So basically, that's what this affordable housing crisis is that we need more adequate affordable housing. However, it should be maybe placed in more areas of the city. And so then you have another problem where in certain area codes and locations in the city, that because of the stigma when it comes to affordable housing, they're saying NIMBY, not in my backyard. So you're trying to distribute this affordable housing to folks so they can have opportunities throughout the community so they can break the generational poverty cycle, but you're running into these challenges. So sometimes affordable housing is not built, or sometimes it's built in an area that is already under siege as well. And I spoke to something earlier about the education, and I want to make sure I clarify my statement because this is important to this topic, because when you're dealing in this certain part of the community that is lack of investment, there's also a lack of investment in terms of education. Because a lot of times, especially in Indiana, you know, in terms of how your school is treated is based on your property taxes. So in the study I talked about, it really is, they estimated that between 68,000 and 84,000 school-aged children does not have internet access at home. So those are the folks that we're talking about, that because of where they live at, they're going to be faced with these inadequate challenges that someone else in another part of the community is not faced with. So that's what I'm seeing that I'm most concerned with, is that the imbalance that it pertains to this problem in communities. And then what does that mean for those 68,000, 84,000 folks who are in these communities that don't have a fair shot at what some of the other folks in the other part of the city have? And to me, that is something that has probably gone on for generations. And I think that's something that's bubbling and bursting right now and that we need to address in a very real, meaningful way.
So part of not having internet access is not being able to afford that. And certainly in Houston, more than 50% of the population is renters. And of that 50% who are renters, half of those individuals are rent burdened, meaning, again, they're paying more than 30% of their income in rent and utilities. And this leaves very little for such as internet access or health care or tutors for your child. It leaves you with just a very thin slice to take care of all of your other needs.
Yeah, and I think that's that certainly is not just the case within Houston or Indiana. I'm sure that is an affordable housing issue that different communities are seeing around the country. I just want to ask you kind of a lightning round question, each of you to answer, because we've got about a minute and a half left in this segment. And we want to go in more detail in it in the next segment. But I want to talk about solutions. Just give me some quick, you know, one-word answers or one-word suggestions of what solutions are, and then we'll do a deeper dive into them in the next segment. Joy, do you want to start with some ideas for solutions?
Well, yes, it begins with financing. It begins with the money, the funding to build affordable housing. Without that, the rest of this is just conversation.
George, what about you?
Can you repeat the question? It's hard to hear you. I'm sorry.
Yeah, what I said was just we're going to talk about solutions more in this next segment, but I just wanted to kind of give an idea of what you think some of the solutions could be. Just some little quick one-word solution ideas.
I said this before, collaborations and coalitions. I'll leave it there.
Okay, great. Well, we're going to break it here, and we're going to come back with our final segment of this episode of Multifamily Matters. You've been listening to Multifamily Matters because multifamily matters.
In a world where keeping up with an ever-evolving technology landscape continues to be a challenge, Allegion helps property managers cut through the noise to supply their residents with the amenity most critical to the digital generation, mobile access control. Ideal for the multifamily market, Allegion has designed mobile-enabled solutions that streamlines access while providing the security and benefits for developers, property managers, and residents alike. To learn more about Allegion's access control product offerings, please visit usallegion.com/MFM.
Your multifamily property's water and sewer rates are skyrocketing every year. The only way to lessen the impact is to reduce water consumption through water conservation. E-Conserve has pioneered a no-cost, no-risk water conservation program, and it doesn't cost you a penny. A property in Houston is saving over $196,000 a year with this no-cost program. Call E-Conserve today at 713-662-3220. For a free analysis of your property, that's eConserve at 713-662-3220.
Well, we are back with our final segment of this episode of Multiple Family Matters, and we are discussing the topic of evictions and public health. I'm Paul Marks. Joining me today by phone are two longtime multifamily industry veterans, George Guy, CEO and Executive Director of the Fort Wayne, Indiana Housing Authority, and Joy Horak Brown, President and CEO of New Hope Housing in Houston, Texas. And by the way, I just want to speak to our supplier partners in the multifamily industry who might be listening to this episode. If you are interested in some very unique sponsorship opportunities, we have a couple available right now. Reach out to us through our website at multifamilyradio.com. Let's talk a little bit about solutions. You know, we've talked about obviously the pandemic and the crisis that has caused to not just the affordable segment of multifamily, but across the spectrum. But there is a regardless of the pandemic, there has always been in recent years a crisis. We talked briefly in the last segment about a couple of ideas for solution. Financing was one of them, and George, you said coalition and collaboration was another. I'm interested in knowing about legislation. Has there been anything done in legislation? George, you want to take that?
Yeah, thanks for that. And I think that when I talk about collaboration and coalitions, I think that we're going to have to be broad with our approach to this and think about advocacy for legislation in our state, not just in our state, but a representative from our state, Congressman Trey Hollingsworth, introduced legislation called the YIMBY Act. And that was introduced in March, him along with our Senator Todd Young, with bipartisan support. Basically, it gives a pathway for communities to start addressing what I talked about before. It basically, like I said, yes, in my backyard. So it gives individuals opportunity that lives in housing opportunity areas, and I air quotes that, to consider that if you allow, let's say, affordable housing development to go up in your community, there may be some opportunities where the local government may be able to do things in terms of tax credits and things of that nature for the residents that are in that community. And those are just some of the ideas that have been used around. But basically what this does is it doesn't allocate money, so to speak, in terms of resources that way, but it makes it easier in terms of some flexibilities to the local communities to be able to have these tough conversations and then come up with solutions that may help. So we think that that is a good thing. And we also think that there's different pathways to make sure those are easier. We do believe, though, that, you know, they need to make sure that the 4% and 9% tax credit allocations that will remain, because that allows you to build more affordable housing in communities. So, again, I think it's going to require some national partnerships as well as local partnerships, and we need to build these coalitions to advocate for legislation that will allow us to do more development across the board, but also we need to be able to also address the inequities that exist both locally and across the country as well. So I think that those are short steps to get you to where you need to go, but we need to partner with our elected officials to come up with meaningful legislation that will work.
There's no question about that. It's important that elected officials and the general public is educated that affordable housing is not what they think it is. It's not what comes to mind. It isn't the projects of the past, many of which have been torn down today and completely replaced. Indeed, affordable housing can be, and certainly the housing that New Hope Housing develops, affordable housing can be at the nexus of art and architecture and nature and have a sense of place and not only fit where it is sited, but actually enhance the neighborhood that it is in. And Paul, I know from the radio station when you're there, and you're not there as often as you were before the pandemic, but when you're there, you were able to see New Hope Housing's latest development, Dale Carnegie, being built. And I believe you can attest to the fact that it is a high-quality, beautiful building with a rooftop garden and many amenities, and that it fits beautifully into its neighborhood. And a lot of pushing NIMBY back is for more and more individuals to realize, guess what? That's an affordable housing development that I'm looking at being built. And not only is it beautiful and beautifully landscaped, but it's meticulously managed. And the residents who are living there are folks who are working in the grocery store, and they're the barista in the coffee shop. They are people working in retail outlets. They are my neighbors, and I need my neighbors to be nearby.
Right. Troy, I wanted to ask you, you had indicated in the last segment that financing was crucial to resolving this crisis, ultimately resolving the crisis, I guess. What do you see happening down the road? Where would financing come from? And what type of a suggestion would you have if you could wave a magic wand and make it happen? How would you see it happening?
Well, I do it in a couple of different ways. One is that I would enhance and expand the 9% and the 4% housing tax credit programs. Those programs, which were instituted under the Reagan administration, and so they have been around since the late 1980s, are the single most significant funding source for affordable housing. Those programs need to be expanded, no question. And also additional funding that flows from HUD through to the cities, dollars such as HOME and CDBG, there are lots of acronyms, lots of flavors of those dollars, and those need to be increased so that we have the affordable housing, that we can stabilize the citizens of this state and this country so that they then can excel in the job market, and we can continue to progress and to address inequities that are systemic and that are longstanding. Those would be two very important ways. And that we also ease some regulations on affordable housing. There are varying fees and structures that make affordable housing a bit more expensive to develop than I would like to see. People always want affordable housing to be inexpensive to develop, and there's no real reason to expect that it would cost less than any private developments do.
And George, yeah, I wanted to ask. Go ahead, George.
No, you go ahead, Paul. I'm sorry.
Well, I was going to ask you about what you had said about collaboration as being one of the answers to the situation. Did you want to expand on that a little bit?
Yeah. So when I talk about that with this, is the public-private partnership. What Joy is talking about and what I'm suggesting in terms of the development projects we've had to partner with, we consider ourselves a public agency, but we've had to partner with private developers, so to speak. We've also had to partner with banks and many folks that to get this done. The city, in terms of the distribution of the home dollars, which I agree with Joy, needs to be more available from HUD to these localities. to allow the right kind of partnerships to come together for the right type of solutions. And so how that works is that if we're able to collaborate more and do more in terms of, because the only way this happens is through public and private partnerships. You need that to be able to leverage what you need to make sure communities are solvent. And again, the business side is there, and then you make sure that you have enough resources, cities are enough resources, and also agencies such as ours, where we can leverage and make things happen and make these communities more vibrant. And that's really what I was talking about in terms of the collaboration. When you think about the social side of it and some of these social inequities, then we need to have more national partnerships between the Department of Education and HUD, Health and Human Services, and those type of things, because it makes things easier when Joy's company or agency, their property manager, when they're trying to reach out and make sure they have the right relationships, those things already exist. In other words, we're not dealing in silos. So those are the right coalitions, I think, that are going to be able to come up with the right solutions going forward in communities, and making sure that we advocate with that in mind.
There's no question about it, and we work with our housing authority here in Houston. We have quite a number of project-based housing vouchers, and certainly we accept vouchers that an individual might bring to us. So we collaborate very strongly with the housing authority in Houston and also very much with the private philanthropic sector. We're working right now. We're developing our 11th and 12th buildings. And we have, as an organization, no foreclosable debt. And we owe that to collaboration and to public-private partnerships. And those philanthropic dollars that have taken that piece that would ordinarily be debt for a developer are what allows us to offer the services to residents that are key to them remaining stable and in housing. Because many, as an affordable developer of supportive housing, many of our residents have experienced homelessness or are at risk, largely because of their income. If you're a family of four and your income is $45,000 a year or less, you are at risk of being, you're at risk every day of destabilizing your life, whether it's your health care, your children's educational needs, paying your rent, or in fact having internet access.
Well, guys, this is a fascinating topic. We could talk about it for an entire another episode. But I do want to transition. I want to give each of you a chance. We've got about 2.5 minutes left in the segment. I want to give each of you a chance to just tell a little bit about your company, your agency. And if someone wanted to reach out to you to find out more or to talk to you about the topic, how could they do that? And I'll start with you, Joy.
Well, you can find out more about us at newhopehousing.com. We're very transparent on that website, and you can write to us at info@newhopehousing.com, or you can telephone 713-220-0290, and we would love to hear from you and have you come out and take a look at our Dale Carnegie building that Paul has watched being developed, or any of our other properties. We are a nonprofit developer of affordable housing for individuals at risk of homelessness or who have experienced homelessness. And indeed, today, we are beginning to develop housing for those who are in the workforce. Think of a teacher's aide who earns in Houston, Texas, $19,000 a year. That's an important job. Or someone who's just graduated from the police academy or the fire academy, or the barista that I mentioned earlier, or the individual working in the retail shop. So we have a broad spectrum of housing, and we're also partnering with other nonprofits, such as Houston Area Women's Center, that works with survivors of intimate violence. We're working with other nonprofits now to help them expand their ability to develop housing. And certainly we work with a broad range of service providers in the city. We have more than 21 partners. So please take a look at newhopehousing.com and come out and see us. We'd love for you to know more.
Thank you, George. George, we got about a minute left.
All right. So, again, thank you, Paul. And it's been a pleasure to meet you, Joy, and I appreciate the work that you all are doing. I consider you a colleague now, so I look forward to when the next time I'm out in Texas to see what's going on there. Here in Fort Wayne, we've been blessed to have the opportunity, although despite the pandemic, to continue to develop. We were able to open up our permanent supportive housing project, River's Edge, which is just over $13 million. When I talk about doing it in a different community of our town, we were able to integrate this permanent supportive housing in a different part of the community, so that has access to housing opportunities. So we're excited about that. We're also excited about the fact that we've been able to redevelop a public housing site using the program called RAD, Rental Assistance Demonstration, where we're going to do $13 million to redevelop what is a 50-year apartment community and make it new for those residents that are there. So they're going to be able to stay there, keep their place, and see something new in terms of, again, that partnership we talk about with public and private. We also have what we call Posterity Scholar House, where we manage 50 homes of single-parent individuals who are trying to achieve an advanced or college degree of some sort. And we're happy about that. And also our aging out of foster care, a permanent supportive housing unit, we have two called Courtyard. So the work continues. We're trying to make sure that we address these inequities that exist, both by housing, but also by partnering with our school districts and also our agencies within our community to ensure that everybody has a fair shot at the right kind of education and opportunity to work and to be assimilate in society as a whole to advance our community.
Fantastic. Jordan, if someone wanted to reach out to you, how could they do it?
Oh, yeah. You can do that by going to www.fwha.org, or you can follow us on Facebook. That's Fort Wayne Housing Authority. You can also follow us on Twitter with the same handle, Fort Wayne Housing Authority.
Fantastic. Well, thank you both so much. It was a great show. We are going to be back next week with another great topic and power panel of industry experts. You've been listening to Multifamily Matters because multifamily matters.
Thank you for listening to Multifamily Matters, a weekly radio show that discusses current topics and trends in the multifamily industry. To find out more about the show or make suggestions for topics or interesting guests, go to multifamilyradio.com. You have been listening to Multifamily Matters because multifamily matters.